Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Given the fact that we are in the home stretch now, of course, to celebrate Thanksgiving, another Thanksgiving holiday coming up, I thought I'd read a little essay from Mary Schmeek, the very talented writer at the Chicago Tribune, entitled, How to Ensure Your Feast Stays Friendly. A couple ideas for Thanksgiving. And Mary writes, would you like to avoid emotional indigestion at Thanksgiving? Do you want to have a regret-free holiday? Then you need our 15-point Thanksgiving pledge. Raise your right hand. Place your left on your gut. Repeat the following. Number one, Thanksgiving is the most peaceful of holidays, and therefore I pledge that I will not initiate, nor will I be dragged into, a discussion of anyone, including Herman Cain. Should the conversation turn to aforementioned person, I will promptly switch it to a topic on which we can all agree, such as Charlie Sheen. Two, I pledge that if I am traveling this Thanksgiving, I will stay as cool as Chicago's weather, even if the weather messes up my travel plans. If I am in an airport, I will be pleasant to airport personnel. They'd like to be on holiday too, remember? I will not use the phrase, don't touch my junk, and frankly, wish I'd never heard it. Three, I will not eat too much, though I make this pledge with the understanding that too much has an expansive definition on Thanksgiving. Number four, I pledge that if I am dining with my choose up to four siblings, children, parents, or ex, I will not revert to my worst role-defined behaviors. When I do, which I will, I hope that they will not revert to theirs, which they will. I pledge not to blame them if they don't blame me. Number five, I pledge, let me take a few cleansing breaths first, I pledge that I will not resurrect insults and arguments from previous Thanksgivings, even as a joke. Number six, I pledge that I will not make a big deal of my dietary preferences, nor will I make fun of anyone else's. No one should be tortured into eating food they don't like at Thanksgiving, but neither should diners insult their dinner mates or the cook. Number seven, I pledge to praise the cook. If I am the cook, I pledge that I will not pout if the praise for my hard work is insufficient. I also pledge that I will sit down and enjoy the meal while somebody else replenishes the mashed potatoes. If I am watching football on TV, I will do so at a volume that doesn't deafen others. Maybe. If I loathe Thanksgiving football at any volume, I will use this day to Google the visa requirements for residency in France. Number nine, I really hope I will not spend the day checking my BlackBerry or iPhone or otherwise engaging in self-abusive technological addictions. Number 10, I pledge I will not drink too much. Sobriety will make all of the above easier, ideally, unless you're with an Irish family like mine. 11, I pledge that after eating and drinking too much, I will not whine about how bad I feel. The only thing more annoying than people who whine after their self-indulgence is the overindulgers who piously announced beforehand that they would behave. Number 12, I pledge not to spend 1 minute of Thanksgiving thinking about shopping on Black Friday, Day of Peace, remember? Number 13, if I did not help cook, then I pledge to help clean up, or at least offer. That's an important one. Number 14, here's the pledge that will enable all my other pledges to come true. I will get some exercise before I eat. And finally, number 15, I pledge to take a few moments to reflect on the bounty in my life and to acknowledge how much I have and have to say thank you for, even if I and my Thanksgiving aren't quite perfect, isn't it true? Some of the ways to ensure that the Thanksgiving feast stays friendly, a 15-point Thanksgiving pledge. And I think the last one, of course, is the most important. I pledge to take a few moments to reflect on the bounty in my life and to acknowledge how much I have to say thank you for, even if I and my Thanksgiving aren't quite perfect. Well, it's coming up. Coming up sooner than we think. Of course, we've had a light dusting of snow the last couple of days. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Not to the extent the East Coast has had a week or two ago, but a little bit something. Something to look forward to, of course. Maybe not on Thanksgiving, but it'll be here soon enough. Of course, at Thanksgiving, one of the great things to do Thanksgiving is to enjoy the great cupcakes over at our friend Pam Rose's Swirls. And, of course, her motto is, Swirls, cupcakes make people happy. Well, she has some of these. I'm looking at an advertisement for it. Thanksgiving trio, pecan pie, pumpkin pie, and apple pie cupcakes. All gluten-free if you'd like them. And vegan gluten-free options available also. And you can pick them up until 6 o'clock on Wednesday, November 23rd. So if you have the opportunity, stop by and see Pam at Swirls Cupcakes. Mention our name at 705 West Belden, right around the corner from Children's Memorial Hospital. Can find out about Swirls on their website, swirlscupcakes.com, or give Pam a call at 773-404-2253. Swirls Cupcakes, the greatest. Well, we had a great time last week at Pheasant Run Resort at Fox Valley Repertory. It was a great show. Kevin Moore presents Score by Score, the best of Broadway musicals. Rodgers and Hammerstein, great response from the audience and the people that were participating. We had a standing ovation. Of course, our cast, our program director, Daryl Nitz, our music director, Becky Menzie, Laura Freeman, and Ann Burnell, and Tom Michael, and KT McCammon, and myself as the host and narrator, MC. Just a terrific evening, and certainly a beautiful venue out there, very intimate space. Had some very talented people helping us out in the sound and the lighting, and it was just a great, great evening, and we all enjoyed it, as did the audience who came out. So if you need some information or would like some information about that space, by all means, check out the Fox Valley Repertory, or our website also. We have a couple shows coming up, one February 12th at the Main Stage, which is in the Rogers Park area. It's Score by Score, the best of Broadway musicals. The music of the night, the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber. And then coming up in April, out at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, the music of George Gershwin. So it should be a lot of fun. You can get that information on our website, kevinmoorepresents.com. Coming up on November 18th, Miscast, four extremely talented vocalists take the stage at Metropolis Performing Arts Center for one night only on November 18th at 8 o'clock. Great venue, as I mentioned before, the Metropolis Performing Arts Center. It's every singer's dream to be on a Broadway stage. Well, vocalist Laura Freeman, Denise McGowan, Becky Menzie, and Marianne Murphy-Arlen in Miscast are no different. Although their comedic musical performance is about the desire for fame, make no mistake, these performers have some of the most powerful voices you'll ever hear. Watch and laugh as these four dreamers fantasize about life under the bright lights and sing show tune classics such as If I Were a Rich Man, Buenos Aires, and much more. And again, Miscast comes to the Metropolis Performing Arts Center November 18th at 8 o'clock. For information, give the box office call at 847-577-2121. Do a great job. Laura Freeman and Becky Menzie, of course, part of our ensemble, and Denise McGowan, who you can see at Pettorino's on Monday nights for their open mic, and Marianne Murphy-Arlen, one of the great cabaret artists in Chicago, and all four part of the Chicago Cabaret Professionals. Be a great evening to enjoy some great entertainment. We have to congratulate those involved in the Jefferson Awards ceremony this past Monday night out at the Drury Lane Oakbrook. The best production for a play, a large play, was The Madness of George III from the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Always do a terrific job. Best production of a musical large size, Candide, at the Goodman Theater. The original Grease won the best musical production, midsize. We congratulate Charlie Newell for Porgy and Bess at the Court Theater, who won the director, best director for a musical. And it's interesting because a lot of the people who have won the Jeff Awards have been on our show. A lot of the theater companies we support, Goodman and Silk Road Theater Project and Northlight Theater, Second City, of course, Writers Theater. So very interesting to see the great success that they have had. And last week was certainly a way to exhibit that by congratulating them for what they did. In fact, we have a Jefferson Award winner on our show coming up from Ragtime, which was a great musical hit at the Drury Lane Oak Brook. Roberta Dushak will be our first guest. This is kind of interesting. Out at the Bank of America Theater coming up in January, only 1 week, maybe less than 2 weeks, January 10th through the 22nd, Come Fly Away. It's the choreography of Twyla Tharp with the vocals and music of Frank Sinatra, if you recall, Moving Out, which was a great similar musical, the choreography of Twyla Tharp and the music of Billy Joel, put together for a terrific musical. Well, this is going to be all about Frank Sinatra's music. This one-of-a-kind experience, it combines the seductive vocals of Old Blue Eyes with the sizzling sound of a live onstage big band and the visceral thrill of Tharp's choreography. As 14 of the world's best dancers tell the story of four couples falling in and out of love, the audience will experience the exhilaration of a first kiss, the excitement of a first dance, and the bittersweet moments of a first goodbye in a world of sparkling romance and astonishing beauty. Come Fly Away features a score of beloved Sinatra classics, including Fly Me to the Moon, My Way, New York, New York, and Witchcraft. The New York Times raised spectacular and dazzling. Twyla Tharp's electrifying celebration of the music of Frank Sinatra will sweep you up in a complete spell. The Associated Press calls Come Fly Away astonishing, a love letter to romance, not to mention the man and his music, with eight marvelous leads and an orchestra of sterling musicians. So should be a lot of fun and certainly a great evening in the theater. Much very similar to Moving Out, and it was a great evening in the theater with the music of Billy Joel, which we, one song after the other, and is, if you remember, he had so many hits, too numerous to mention, but certainly a lot of fun. And we lost a great entertainer, writer, journalist, and man about town last week. Andy Rooney, of course, is on 60 Minutes, and a little excerpt of some of the witticisms that came from Andy Rooney. One of them, he said, computers make it easier to do a lot of things, but most of the things they make it easier to do don't need to be done. Very true. That's very true. One of the other things he said, if dogs could talk, it would take a lot of the fun out of owning one. Also said, I'm already suspicious of anyone who thinks he or she is smart enough to be president. You'd have to have some ego to believe that about yourself. Vegetarian is an old Indian word meaning lousy hunter. Maybe so. But certainly we say goodbye to Andy Rooney. A Drury Lane Theater presents The Sound of Music, the Tony Award and Academy Award-winning musical by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein through January 8th. A captivating love story featuring some of Broadway's most popular music. The Sound of Music is directed and choreographed by multi-Jeff Award winner Rachel Rockwell. The Sound of Music features an all-star cast led by five-time Jeff Award nominee Larry Adams as Captain Von Trapp, Tony Award nominee Patty Cohenour as Mother Abbess, and introducing Jennifer Blood as Maria. Set in Austria in the late 1930s, The Sound of Music is the enchanting story of Maria, a spirited young nun who leaves the convent to become a governess for the seven children of the widowed Captain Von Trapp. Maria endears herself to the mischievous children by teaching them to sing and leading them on adventures through the Austrian countryside, eventually capturing the stern captain's heart. After Maria and Captain Von Trapp marry, the Nazi Party orders him to join a naval unit, forcing the family to flee the Nazi regime by escaping across the Alps on foot. Based on the memoir of Maria Von Trapp, the story of the Trapp family singers, The Sound of Music, features classic songs including My Favorite Things, Climb Every Mountain, 16 Going on 17, Edelweiss, and The Sound of Music. And on the line with us right now is the Jeff Award-winning director for the musical Ragtime, and musical director for such hits as Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, High School Musical, and The Rocky Horror Show. Award-winning actress having appeared in Scrooge, Showboat, and the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. Broadway performer who has been seen at the Ravinia and Sondheim's Sunday in the Park and A Little Night Music, teacher, mentor, and one of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago theater, now presenting The Sound of Music at Drury Lane Oak Brook through January 8th, our good friend, Roberta Dushek. Roberta, welcome back to The Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and congratulations on another success. Everything you touch turns to gold, kiddo.
Well, I hope so. I try really hard.
Well, you know, you surround yourself with such talented people, and I'm sure they're saying the same thing. And, you know, it's funny, Roberta, that Drury Lane Oak Brook has become one of the premier destinations for great theater in general.
It really has, and it's really all thanks to Kyle DeSantis and his family. They've put, you know, all their money and trust in, you know, people like me and Rachel Rockwell and Bill Osatek, the artistic director, and they just let us do what we want to do, and we couldn't have more support. It's amazing. And then we get to hire amazing talent like Patty Colinar and Larry Adams and Jennifer Blood. It's amazing. They always say, you know, 90% is casting, you know, which makes a great show, and our cast is amazing.
You know, I had our mutual friend Jimmy Cordy on the show a couple weeks ago and talking about his success out at the Paramount Broadway series that he has out there. And, you know, I think it reinforces the fact that not that it's not terrific to go downtown and see the Broadway and Chicago series. You know, for those people who are unable or just can't or don't have the time, you're going to see some great theater out in the suburbs now that you wouldn't miss not going downtown.
Oh, it's so true. You know, it's not the Drury Lane from 10 years ago. They put so much money and time and effort, and the designers that we get to work with are all Broadway caliber. So, yeah, if people haven't gone to the Drury Lane in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, they really should. They have amazing theater. Yeah.
Well, you know, you look at Rodgers and Hammerstein, and you look at all the great hits they had, Oklahoma and Carousel and The King and I and South Pacific and Cinderella and Flower Drum Song. And, of course, their last great hit together was Sound of Music. I think Oscar Hammerstein passed away a few months just after Sound of Music opened on Broadway.
Right, right.
And these are people who addressed, you know, not only wrote for the entertainment of the audience, but for their cultural stimulation, intellectual stimulation also.
They did. You know, as I was dissecting this music after a long time, you realize how smart these composers were. You know, they took a great story, and we always forget what a great story Sound of Music is, besides the music that we all know so well. And they just knew where to put a tune and how to make it integral with the story, you know. You know, they say they don't write them like that anymore, and sometimes I believe that.
You know, you wonder how, to me it's fascinating, I'm sure, as you said, to yourself also, how do you think up all these great songs and the great lyrics that go with the songs? I mean, one after another.
I know. I worked with John Kander from Kander and Ebb several years ago, and I was working with him during 9/11, and all of Broadway was singing New York, New York. And I said, how did you come up with that tune? And he was laughing. He's like, one day I was sitting at the piano and all I did was go, bum, bum, ba, da, da, and I couldn't get out of my head, you know? So it's so funny how they come up with these, and then they're brilliant. Everyone leaves singing The Lonely Goat Herd. You remember that one?
I certainly do, yes.
Right. Well, that sounds so annoying, you know, but you can't stop singing it. Yes.
You know, we have a production company, and we just did the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein out at the Fox Valley Repertory out in at the Pheasant Hill Resort out in St. Charles. And to the people that we, of course, that come to the show, and when we do the various songs from the various musicals of Rodgers and Hammerstein, inevitably they'll lean over to each other and say, oh, remember that, or remember where we were when we first heard that, or remember the first time we went to that musical. These are timeless musicals that will live forever.
Oh, it is. It's so true. And when Patty Colinar sings Climb Every Mountain, there is not a dry eye in the house.
I'll bet she gives you goosebumps.
Oh,
you know, it really
glorious.
Does.
Yeah.
I'm going to embarrass you a little bit here. I'm going to read a little bit something here of one of our town's critics' comments. What most people want to know, that they can take their families to one of the greatest musicals ever penned, feel every beautiful note of that stunning Rodgers and Hammerstein score, and likely as not, recreate an experience from their own youth. Well, here's that warranty. Rockwell's Sound of Music delivers all the requisite pleasures. Isn't that true? And I've heard that it's sold out, is it not?
It's selling out. There still are tickets available, but it is selling out. Yeah, the music is so beautiful, and we were really careful with every note, you know, and lyric. They're so beautiful, and they make so much sense, you know. There's nothing wasted. So,
you know, when you do a musical like this, you and Rachel, of course, are business partners outside of being colleagues, of course, in the world of entertainment. Do you look at the original Sound of Music, not only on stage, but also in the movie with Christopher Plummer and Julie Andrews, and say, this is how they do it? I'd like to tweak this a little bit to make it our own.
Rachel and I have so much fun together. It's almost unfair because we've been friends, you know, throughout the years. We've performed on many stages all over together. So we were performers first. And, you know, we always think of how would we feel if we did it? And then it's all about intention, music too. You know, it has to be honest and real. And yeah, we look at everything. We listen to every recording and then we throw all that away and we make it our own.
That's kind of neat. And the response from the audience, of course, across the board has been very, very positive. And you get that instant validation, of course, being in the live theater that you know if they like or they don't like, and everybody likes it.
So true. You know, we know immediately if people enjoy it. That's true.
You know, you wear a lot of different hats, as we were talking a little earlier. You've been a musical director for so many great productions, the American Theater Company, Original Grease, this great musical at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, which I was exhausted after I saw it, Murder for Two. I can't imagine what the performers are doing.
Oh, my goodness. And we have put in several different actors in those roles. It's so difficult, but it's so much fun. It's really smart and new and edgy. And, and we have to, these actors have to be amazing piano players. So.
And it's still playing, is it not?
It is.
Yeah, that's terrific.
It's getting extended. Very exciting.
And, of course, Rocky Horror Show, which is a little different than that. But, you know, what's kind of interesting, I think, is your accomplishment not only from the one side of the world of entertainment and in musical direction, but also as a successful actress. How does that work when you're directing? You having been an actress, you can kind of see what the ins and outs of things are and relate a little more to the sensitivity of a performer.
Definitely. You know, what we do is, it's very, it's kind of a naked art in the sense of, you know, we really have to put our souls out there and be vulnerable, and we do it so quickly. We have 3 weeks of rehearsal, and then we're up. So the demands on our actresses and actors are, you know, is pretty great, and I remember what it was like. You're trying to learn all these lines and music and steps and blocking, and I remember having musical directors, you know, you have to do this, and you have to do this, and you have to do this. And so I give them their space of it, and then I nitpick them to death afterwards. But, you know, it's kind of like I know when they're ready to receive my information and when they're not. So that's helpful, being on the other side, you know, as an actor.
What's that old saying? When the student is ready, the teacher will be there.
Exactly.
You know when the student is ready. Yeah. Do you enjoy doing one over the other? Would you rather be performing, acting as an actress, or do you enjoy the musical direction side of things?
Well, you know, the musical direction kind of just came unexpectedly, and I just said yes. Mm-hmm. So, and I keep saying yes.
Yes.
So,
and they keep asking.
So that's good. I love everything. I really don't have much time to act anymore. I do a lot of vocal coaching and on the side. On the side. That's funny. And there's never enough hours in the day. But I really like to be versatile and keep it, you know. I never know what I'm going to do every day, so it's fun.
Well, what's coming up next for Roberta Duche?
Let's see. Well, I'm going to be musical directing Gypsy at Jerry Lynn Oakbrook.
Oh, cool.
A Little Night Music at Writers Theater on the North Shore. And I've been vocal coaching Russell Crowe for the Les Miserables movie. So
really?
That's interesting, too. So, yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about that now.
he's a great guy, and he wants to be the best Javert possible. Mm-hmm. So I coached him to get ready for to sing for Cameron McIntosh. And, mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, they loved him. And he's going to be fantastic. It's really exciting.
You know, it'll be really interesting because that's been around for so long, and it's finally being made into a movie. Now, of course, Russell Crowe is Javert and
Hugh Jackman
is Jean Valjean. Okay, good. Yeah, that's going to be exciting.
It is.
Of course, Gypsy at Drury Lane Oakbrook, that'll be exciting. Sondheim's A Little Night Music, certainly, and you have performed in that, as you have Sunday in the Park with George, two of the great musicals, modern musicals by this great composer, Stephen Sondheim. That's got to be exciting.
It is exciting, and I just completed Sweeney Todd, which was at Dury Lane, Oakbrook 2, and I would go home seriously crying every night. How am I going to teach these actors this singing, you know, 5/4 time? It was so hard. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. But I think we accomplished everything, and it was a pretty great show.
Well, that'll be another something that we look forward to seeing. That'll be terrific. The original 1959 Broadway production of The Sound of Music won 8 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Book, and Score, and ran for over 1,200 performances. The production was the final collaboration between the legendary team of Rodgers and Hammerstein. Since its original Broadway premiere in 1959, the musical has been nominated for a multitude of awards and has been presented on stages around the world, including hits in London and Broadway productions. The acclaimed 1965 film version of The Sound of Music, starring Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer, won 5 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. And, of course, the legacy continues out at the Drury Lane Oakbrook. Drury Lane Theater presents The Sound of Music, the Tony Award and Academy Award-winning musical by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein, through January 8th. And on the line with us right now is the very talented Roberta Dushek, who's also the teacher of Russell Crowe. That's a piece of distinction there. You know, I'm going to give a phone number, Roberta, for Drury Lane, 630-530-0111. What a great way to celebrate the holidays, to come down and see Sound of Music at a great venue and have a little bite to eat at Mr. DeSantis's place, who I used to caddy for in Beverly when I was living out there.
Oh, that's so great.
And, you know, it's just terrific to chat with you, and continued success, certainly, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about the Gypsy coming up, and certainly A Little Night Music, one of my favorites.
Me too.
Well, you have a good holiday. Thank you, kiddo.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, Roberta. Roberta Dushek, of course, who does such a terrific job in anything she takes up. The brightest, one of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago theater. The Sound of Music, Drury Lane Oakbrook, through January 8th. And again, for information, 630-530-0111. Very interesting, certainly a lot of fun. It's amazing, all the work that Roberta has done in and around Chicago. As I said, she's been with the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, the American Theater Company, Drury Lane Theater, the Biograph Theater, the Marriott Theater up in Lincolnshire, the Mercury Theater, and on and on and on. It's just a delight to be able to chat with her. And certainly it is a great way to celebrate the holidays if you have the opportunity to go to Drury Lane Oakbrook and see The Sound of Music. Of course, one of Rodgers and Hammerstein's greatest hits, if not their greatest, and certainly their last. But interesting, because Rodgers and Hammerstein always felt that Carousel was one of their finest works. It was named the best musical of the 20th century by Time magazine, but Sound of Music certainly the most enduring of all. The Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra kicks off its 65th anniversary season with a concert by the organization's 130-member symphony orchestra at Chicago's Orchestra Hall, 220 South Michigan, this November 20th at 7:30. Under the baton of music director Alan Tinkham, the orchestra will perform works by Strauss, Prokofiev, Barber, and Scriabin. Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra has earned an international reputation as a premier orchestral ensemble featuring extraordinary young musicians from the Chicago area. Reviewing a recent performance by John Von Rien of the Chicago Tribune remarked, "I was pleasantly surprised by how good, and by that I mean professional level, the performances turned out to be." Alan Tinkham's vigorous, communicative baton brought forth an adrenaline rush of superior playing from his high school age champs. That's quite high praise. And on the line with us right now is a nationally recognized conductor, having worked with the Oregon Symphony, the Chicago Symphony, and orchestras across the United States. Music director, having performed at Millennium Park, Ravinia, Carnegie Hall, and Orchestra Hall. Teacher, mentor, proud graduate of the Eastman School of Music and the University of Michigan, and the music director of the Chicago's Youth Symphony Orchestra, now presenting its fall concert in celebration of their 65th anniversary season at Chicago's Orchestra Hall, Sunday, November 20th at 7:30, Mr. Alan Tinkham. Alan, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Pleasure to be on the show.
Well, it's great to have you, and congratulations on the success. 65 years. Geez, I didn't realize you were around that long.
It has been a long time. I think all the time about that group of young musicians in Chicago in 1947, when there was no youth orchestra in the city, who decided they wanted someplace to play serious orchestra music. And it's hard to imagine for us at that time.
Well, you know, that's the success, and the success continues, and you are continuing that legacy. And there has been some quite world-class musicians who have come out of the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra.
That is true. We are very pleased to have alumni in some first desks in some of the greatest orchestras in the world.
It's hard enough being a young person in high school. It's hard enough going through the ups and downs of adolescence. It must be, to an extent, a labor of love, as I'm sure you'll say, but a little difficult sometimes getting the attention of these young people. Yet music is their focus, and music keeps them together. How do you handle the teaching of music with the discipline of youth?
You know, I have to say that was probably the most difficult thing for me starting at CYSO. I was 27 when I started.
Oh,
and I had trained in conducting, but I hadn't really trained in working with young people. I had some experience with it, not only from being a young person myself, but both of my parents were high school teachers, and I learned a lot from them. And I remember that time, and I remember my music training during that time extremely fondly as, you know, really the completely life-changing, and especially some important teachers. One teacher in particular, my high school band director, who was still the most important teacher I've ever had. And I like to think that I channel those people when I work with young people.
Well, you know, and you could say firsthand too, Alan, the fact that you look at, and as you say, you referred to your high school band teacher as an integral part that made a difference in your life. I'm sure there's a lot of kids that you've had over the years that are saying the same of you.
Well, I certainly hope so.
And maybe not, I don't know. Well, you know, of course, it's a great get-together. You have a fall concert, but you also have a Christmas concert, don't you?
You know, we have a special concert in December. I wouldn't call it a Christmas concert since we don't have any Christmas repertoire on there, but
okay.
We are playing another concert at the Midwest International Band and Orchestra Clinic, and that will be on the morning of Thursday, December 15th. Is that right, the 15th, I think?
That's true. Now, you travel all around the country with the kids?
Yes, we do. We haven't done too much domestic touring recently. I've been to Carnegie Hall with them, but every couple of years we take a trip abroad. This coming summer we'll be in Spain.
Wow. You know, how does a kid who plays at Carnegie Hall, boy, that's got to be quite exciting for them. And they know what Carnegie Hall is, I would imagine.
It really is, and it was quite a thing to be on the stage. I remember noticing immediately the acoustics there, and while we get to play in orchestra hall at least twice a year, and we've played in some of the greatest halls in the world, Leipzig Gewandhaus, lots of wonderful halls in Europe and in South America, but Carnegie Hall really has a unique acoustic. I remember standing on the podium and listening to something the percussionist was doing on the back of the stage, and it sounded like he was right next to me.
Wow.
It was just uncanny, but you know, the history of that hall has certainly lent itself to some amazing performances.
Well, and one of those is the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra. As a young man and as a young musician, you practiced every day, I'm sure sometimes voluntarily and sometimes with a little persuasion.
Yeah.
The young people, are they more susceptible this day to concentrating on their practice? And I'm sure they still have to do it every day, do they not?
Oh, absolutely they do, and they have more distractions than ever, I think. The whole learning process is so completely different from when it was, even when I was studying really relatively not that long ago. But they have just YouTube alone, the amount of information, the amount of experience you can gain from watching videos of all the greatest classical musicians and all the greatest orchestras in the world for free on YouTube anytime you want. It's really completely amazing, and so even though I think that the sort of multimedia bombardment that our entertainment has tended to become with not only the internet but movies, the screens are bigger, the soundtrack is always louder, but I think that there are equal advantages to all of that technology in the world, and I think that people will see that.
You know, we all have mentors, we all have people we look up to. As a conductor, who do you look up to, or who did you look up to as a young man or a young person getting involved in the world of music and saying, you know, someday I would like to be able to do that?
Well, I would have to say probably the single conductor who influenced me the most is would have to be Carlos Kleiber, and he's someone I never saw perform live. I've only seen him on videos, and he conducted relatively seldom and only a relatively small repertoire. But what he does, or what he did, just made it seem so easy and so fluid and passionate at the same time, and so relaxed but energized simultaneously. It's just incredible music making, I think.
You know, you see some conductors, and for lack of a better term, really get into the conducting, and they get all emotional, and they get it's a very viscerally physical experience. There's a lot of bouncing up and down. There's a lot of use of the baton and so forth. It becomes very acrobatic almost to an extent. Is that conductor who approaches his music that way any different than a conductor who is a little less, what would you say, physical?
Well, there are many ways to skin a cat, although that's not a very pretty idiom. I don't know why that just came to me. But there are lots of different ways and lots of different styles, lots of different ideas of how this should be. And the conductor who has proven to me more than anyone that we can do very little physically and accomplish tremendous things musically is Pierre Boulez.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the other hand, I realize I'm probably not in that camp. I conduct with a baton. I happen to be a bit more physical, but I do feel strongly that as I get older, I find that moving less and taking information away from the players physically and trying to allow more to happen in the orchestra is really very important. It's just so easy to get in the way, honestly, when you conduct like that.
And I would imagine these kids, how often do you practice with these kids?
I see them primarily once a week, Sunday afternoons, the symphony orchestra. And occasionally we have midweek dress rehearsals, but it's pretty much 3 hours a week.
And that's not really a lot when you look at the whole scheme of things, given what you're performing here. Yet in the same respect, those young people, knowing you as well as they do, have a feel for what your expectations are and hopefully meet those expectations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the young people all understand that we make it as much about the process as possible. While it's wonderful to have a great concert and wonderful to get a nice review and wonderful to have everyone tell you how great it was, the most important thing is what happens between the first reading of the piece and getting on the stage for the concert. It's all that work and the pushing ourselves and the responsibility to the composer and to the audience and to our colleagues in the orchestra who all equally need to perform at their best.
You know, aside from the musicianship, which is such an integral part of this, the kids are really getting a great education, are they not, Ellen?
I like to think so.
Yeah. Just about classical music, about the people that made classical music, that created classical music, and who knows, that will be the incentive for them moving forward to continue and do the same thing.
Well, I certainly hope so, and one of the things I think is wonderful about teaching young people through the medium of orchestra music is that it really is a microcosm of society in so many ways. You have to, on the one hand, have the courage to play the solo with everyone listening to you and potentially judging you, and then turn around and have the humility, have the presence of mind to be able to listen to all those other 100 people and be able to perform with them exactly together. It mirrors a lot of the roles that we have to play in our lives and at work and with family and friends.
You know, it's as much a team effort as anything in sports or anything in life, as you say.
Absolutely.
A good company being put together. And what you do is you stimulate and engage those young people's imagination, and you stimulate and engage their intellect, and you stimulate and engage, you know, what they need to be and who they could be, and you bring that out in them. And I think that's quite remarkable.
Well, that's what it's all about. It's our potential.
Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestras has provided music education through orchestral programs and performances opportunities of the highest caliber for 65 years. Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestras currently serves 450 Chicago-area musicians ages 7 through 18 through 5 core orchestras, chamber music, music theory, and composition. It also reaches 2,500 Chicago public school students and educators each year through its Music Pathways program, which features presentations and concerts by Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra musicians and training for Chicago Public School teachers on how to incorporate music into their classroom curriculum. Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra is investing in the future of music and the next generation of leaders. Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra's mission is threefold: to advance and inspire the musical and personal development of young musicians by providing intensive training and unparalleled opportunities, to advocate for involvement in classical music to underserved youth through student-to-student engagement programs, and to amaze, entertain, and educate audiences with thoughtful, innovative programming. Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra kicks off its 65th anniversary season with a concert by the organization's 130-member symphony orchestra at Chicago's Orchestra Hall, 220 South Michigan, November 20th at 7:30. Under the baton of music director Alan Tinkham, the orchestra will perform works by Strauss, Prokofiev, Barber, and Scriabin. On the line with us right now is the man who does amaze us all, from the podium, Mr. Alan Tinkham. Alan, I'm going to give a phone number if people would like tickets, which is 312-939-2207, extension 31, for the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra's fall anniversary concert, the 65th anniversary of the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra, on November 20th at 7:30. Alan, a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm sure people have said this before, but certainly formally, I'd like to say thank you for sharing your great talents and unique talents with all of us in teaching these young people to do what they do.
Well, thank you, Kevin. The pleasure is entirely mine.
And we will look forward to seeing you on the 20th.
I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Take care, my pal.
All right, bye-bye.
Alan Tinkham, the music director of the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra, and their performance, their 65th anniversary fall concert, November 20th at 7:30. And certainly a very remarkable man, leading those young people to the success that they have, and certainly great success it is to perform the great works of these classical composers, Richard Strauss and Prokofiev and Samuel Barber and Alexander Scriabin. Quite remarkable. We have a young man by the name of Bobby O'Sullivan, who's a good friend of ours. His dad is, and certainly does a terrific job, and very accomplished young man, and doing great things with the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra, as all of his fellow musicians in the orchestra are. So it will be fun on November 20th down at Orchestra Hall. That in itself is, I guess, an accomplishment, to be able to play on the stage of Orchestra Hall. Quite remarkable. Lonesome Road Productions, in association with Jim Jensen and Lisa Land Productions, announces the Chicago arrival of the critically acclaimed The Doyle and Debbie Show, created by Bruce Arnston and starring Bruce Arnston, Jenny Littleton, and Matt Carlton. The Doyle and Debbie Show at the Royal George Cabaret, 1641 North Halsted. Doyle Mayfield, an old guard country star with a handful of hits back in the 70s and 80s, is reviving his career 30 years, four wives, and three Debbies later. The new Debbie, a single mother with three children, sees this lovable Lothario as her last chance to make it big in Nashville. But she also questions hitching her star to this loose cannon. The Doyle and Debbie Show, featuring all original songs in sublime homage and parody, simultaneously idolizing and lampooning country music's tradition of iconic duos and the battle of the sexes that accompany them. Bruce Arnston and Jenny Littleton take audiences on a freewheeling joyride through a wickedly funny script and score, all delivered with utmost sincerity. On the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage and screen, Nashville-based musician, writer, and composer, star of the Ernest movies, multi-talented musician accomplished on both the piano and the saxophone, nationally recognized performer with both country music television and at the Grand Ole Opry, and just a very funny and sincerely welcoming man, now starring as the iconic Doyle Mayfield in Chicago's newest hit musical, The Doyle and Debbie Show, now playing at the Royal George Theater, 1641 North Halsted. On the line with us right now is our good pal, Bruce Arnson. Bruce, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Kevin, thank you. It's a treat to be here.
I want to say howdy, partner.
I'll tell you what, things are going pretty darn good.
I've been around here a long time in Chicago, and nobody in the country music field, music, performance, or anything, has taken the Chicago by storm like you have, Bruce.
Well, it's just been a head spinner for us. We had no idea if people would even care if we were here or not. So it's been a really gas of a month so far.
Well, they care a lot, and it's continuing to play. It's continuing to get extended. And what a great thing to do over the holidays, to come and see this just fun show on the stage of the Royal George Theater.
I hope so. I hope it's something that people will come back and want to bring their friends back to.
Now tell me about Doyle Mayfield, will you?
Well, he is kind of in the mold of the old guard country stars that are kind of dying off now, but George Jones may be one of the last of the breed. But Porter Wagoner and the Wilburn brothers and some of those folks who a lot of people know from their syndicated television shows from back in the 60s and 70s. And those guys, including the Grand Ole Opry performers, and a lot of them were on the Opry, they all had that old vaudeville, hillbilly vaudeville sensibility about how show business worked, with a very, very formal presentation and yet a really sweet amateurishness at the same time. And that was the charm of that, the sincerity of that, and then it's just great folk music at the same time. And so that's where Doyle springs from, is that world.
And, of course, he hooks up with this young woman, this single mother who wants to try to make it big, and she does a pretty good job, much to the chagrin of Doyle.
Well, he loves it because as much as she's looking to him for stardom, he's looking for her to revive his career. So it's mutual.
How are you enjoying Chicago? How are you enjoying the audiences and spending? Is this the first time you've been in Chicago?
Yeah, it is, other than just, you know, some really quick visits. This is the only time I've spent any time. And I am from the Midwest originally. I'm from Minnesota. So, you know, the winter's not going to be as big a shock to me as it is to Jenny, who plays Debbie, because she is a Nashville area native. But we're loving it. All of us are loving it. And I was serious about not knowing how the crowds would respond to it. That has been just a gas. The more people, you know, the longer we're there, the more people realize that they have permission to laugh at us, and that makes the show a lot easier to do as well.
Well, you know, you have a great associate in Jimmy Jensen, who has been around Chicago theater for so long, and he knows the ropes, and it's uncanny when Jim can find something or see something that he knows is going to be very well received, and certainly he has in the Doyle and Debbie show, and he's just a terrific guy, as you know.
Gave us a ton of confidence to come in here. Just his little stamp of approval just to tell us, yeah, it'll work here. Just give it time. And that was huge, as well as he had some great input when we were in previews, too. And he's just the theater master, and he gave us all the confidence to come in here and see what we could do.
You know, of course, we come out and we laugh at Bruce Arnston and the character he portrays as Doyle Mayfield and so forth. But very truly, Bruce Arnston is a very accomplished musician and certainly has been involved in all aspects of the music business.
Yeah, I've bumped around on the fringes more than anything. I've never made a big splash in any one area, but I've dabbled in a little bit of all of it. Done a little bit of film scoring and television scoring and that kind of thing.
Of all those different hats you wear, are you enjoying the performing this the best?
This is the most fun I've ever had.
Really?
Absolutely. 'Cause I've not... Theater is actually where I've spent the least amount of time. This is my first attempt at writing a full-on theatrical production, and so I hadn't been on the stage, and by on the stage I mean just performing as in a rock and roll band or whatever for about 20 years. So I'm having the time of my life. It's like a second childhood to me.
Well, for our listeners, just give us a brief overview of what happens on the stage there, Bruce.
Well, it is the scenario is that Doyle is attempting to make one last comeback. He's known by his duo name Doyle and Debbie, and he's gone through two Debbies already. He married them and divorced them and crashed and burned numerous times. And now 10 years later, he found this gal named Debbie singing in his hometown VFW hall. And he just, the light went off, and he thought, here it is. This is my one last shot at stardom. And so she willingly went along with him because she had nothing going. She had three kids that she was raising by herself and needed one shot at Nashville herself. So this is their first night in Nashville wherein Debbie discovers what a horrible mistake she's made. And then so it kind of all plays out between the two of them over the course of the evening where we watch and see if they can triumph over Doyle's adversities.
Does she know how much Doyle needs her?
That's a good question. think she's I think she's quickly learning that that for Doyle everything is about Doyle. And so I think she's a pretty savvy young gal and is starting to learn that she needs to watch out for herself.
You know, I saw something in the newspaper, and this is, I'm going to embarrass you a little bit here, but hey, it's my show, I can do that. And you were called the Stephen Sondheim of country music send-ups. That's quite a compliment.
Those words have never been put in one sentence before. Nor should they ever be. that is crazy.
90 minutes of goofy perfection, clever, hilarious, wacky, and brilliantly performed by Doyle Mayfield, the washed-up and decidedly creepy country singer, and the bravura Jenny Littleton, playing the last of his many Debbies. But I don't think that might be not the last of the Debbies. You might still have something up your sleeve, right?
Well, he may, but I think he's hoping that she's the one. And he also is, he recognizes talent when he sees it, because Doyle's no slouch. And honestly, Jenny Littleton that plays Debbie will blow your socks off. She has an incredible voice and mimics to a T everyone from Patsy Cline to Dolly Parton to Tammy Wynette. It's just unbelievable. So Doyle, in finding Debbie, it was very similar to Bruce finding Jenny when he wrote this piece.
You know, it's funny, and you've seen a lot of entertainers over the years, as long as you've been in the business, Bruce, and there are just some people who have that knack or have that ability to be able to, I don't want to use the word mimic, but certainly sing or act or be comedic like some of the other entertainers, and they just have that in their DNA, and it just works.
It is. It's a spooky thing when it's done right. And with Jenny, I had auditioned her for a little low-budget film about 12 years ago when she was for a little young ingenue part, and she was in her early 20s. And I just immediately thought of Madeline Kahn.
Oh, yeah.
She had that kind of comic timing. Right. And she's in. Anytime you get a beautiful woman who doesn't mind looking foolish, you've got a gold mine. And then you add to that the ability to sing like that, and oh, my God.
Well, of course, we hope that you stay in Chicago for a while, but what's in the future? Will be taking this around the United States? Or
That's kind of the hope. If we can, you know, if we're fortunate enough to warrant an extended run here, then that will certainly help us in launching to other cities, and that is definitely a goal.
Of course, you might be able to have different shows in different cities now. I don't know how you could spread yourself that thin, but maybe there's not only another Debbie out there, there might be another Doyle out there.
I'm hoping. your lips to God's ears. If we can spread the land with little Doyles and Debbies everywhere, I would love that.
As I'm saying that, Bruce, Jim Jensen might be a good Doyle Mayfield.
I can see it.
Could you see it?
Yeah.
You make sure you mention it, do we?
I will.
The Doyle and Debbie Show is sublime parody, simultaneously lampooning and idolizing country music's tradition of iconic duos and their subsequent battle of the sexes. Bruce Arnston and Jenny Littleton wield the vocals of vintage country stars and the acting chops of Broadway veterans, taking audiences on a freewheeling joyride through a wickedly funny script and a slew of equally hilarious original songs. Over the past 3 years, Doyle and Debbie have developed a rabid cult following in Nashville, many of whom have seen the show over a dozen times, everyone from theater-going professionals to college students who wouldn't be caught dead in a theater or a country bar. Lonesome Road Productions, in association with Jim Jensen and Listlin Productions, announces the Chicago arrival of the critically acclaimed The Doyle and Debbie Show, created by Bruce Arnston and starring Bruce Arnston, Jenny Littleton, and Matt Carleton. The Doyle and Debbie Show runs at the Royal George Cabaret, 1641 North Halsted, one block north of North Avenue, on Halsted. On the line with us right now is Bruce Arnston. Bruce, you know, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. Welcome to Chicago, and certainly enjoy your time here. We got to go out. I got to show you a couple of restaurants in and around the Chicagoland area. I don't know any country and western ones, but we can go somewhere else, you know.
I'm in. Hey, I love jazz, Kevin. Let's go.
And certainly enjoy yourself here, and thank you very much again for taking a little time. And I just hope this plays for a long time because, you know, we all need a few laughs in Chicago.
My pleasure, Kevin.
Take care, my pal. Bruce Arnston from the Doyle and Debbie Show out down at the Royal George Cabaret, 1641 North Halsted. And again, it's an open run, but don't wait to see it because it's something you do want to enjoy if you have the opportunity to. People were doubled over in laughter. It was so funny. And, you know, a lot of people aren't you know, myself included, I'm not into really the country music style of things, but this the job that Bruce does, and Jenny Littleton, very talented lady, and Matt Carlton, just remarkable, really is. You know, before we go, I got to read a couple of things I took out of the Chicago Tribune. Ever had that itch to call in sick, maybe even when you weren't? Well, here's a sampling of excuses given by absent employees, according to a Career Builder survey of 6,900 employers and workers put together by the Tribune Company. One of the excuses, well, got bats in her hair. The other one is deer bit during hunting season. The other is ate too much at a party. The other fell out of bed and broke his nose. The other got a cold from a puppy. This one is hurt his back chasing a beaver. That speaks for itself. Had a headache after going to too many garage sales. And finally, a brother-in-law was kidnapped by a drug cartel while in Mexico. I don't know if he chased after him, but maybe she left him with the beaver. But, well, that's kind of funny. That about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me, and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Bruce Arnson from the Doyle and Debbie Show. A terrific time in the theater down at the Royal George, 1641 North Halsted, one block north of North Avenue on Halsted. For information, 312-988-9000. Roberta Dushak, she's everywhere, actually. She's a Jeff Award winner for Ragtime and, of course, involved with the Sound of Music, as she said. She's going to be directing Gypsy coming up at Drury Lane Oakbrook and up at the Writers' Theater. A Little Night Music, of course. We're all familiar with that Sondheim musical because the great song, Send in the Clowns, comes from A Little Night Music. At the Drury Lane Oakbrook, the Sound of Music, through January 8th, for information, 630-530-0111. Finally, Alan Tinkham. Alan, who is the conductor of the Chicago Youth Symphony in their 65th anniversary fall concert, down at Orchestra Hall, November 20th at 7:30. For information, 312-939-2207, extension 31. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
Year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, then a luck, then I suppose the music. The music.